The following is a special documentary report on the recent three-day moratorium at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. The moratorium was front-page news for several days. It made national television network programs, local television news programs, and many people are wondering exactly what happened. We talked with several students involved in the moratorium, President Fierbringer. We have a couple tape recordings of speeches that were made to the moratorium. We're talking now to Neil Laumann, the student body president of Concordia Seminary.
Well, Rod, I don't think it was any one special point this year that this came out. From the very beginning of the year, when the students had some strong feelings in taking part in forming our curriculum, such as when we wanted voting members on the Educational Policy Committee, and other actions like this, I think it was a growing sort of spirit all year that suddenly more than just a few people became caught up in. And I personally saw it as a very creative, hopeful sort of thing, except it had a lot of overtones of heading in different directions and of chaos when it first kind of erupted.
Now, we read a lot about revolutions on campus and student unrest. How much of this was sparked by the rebellions on other campuses, and how much of this was an internal thing?
This was a question that we had to face ourselves right at the beginning of this as we started talking to the administration, to the faculty, because I don't think we wanted to be on the bandwagon, you know, just doing something a year after or a couple months after other major universities have done it. But at the same time, I think the spirit that's alive today in students, graduate students, university students, is something that we are caught up in, that we would like a voice in certain things that shape our lives. This, I believe, is real, but from there, I think the similarity stops. The sort of responsibility that the students en masse decided to handle themselves, the manner that they did it, the dialogue, accepting the consequences that they realized would spring out of this. All of these things, I don't believe I see that much in the others that are played up.
Behind this all is student power in a good sense, and maybe you could describe what student power is in a good sense and what you mean by students participating in their education.
Student power in the best sense would be, well, River Forest, one of the students earlier in the year, translated it into Christ power, the type of power which takes seriously our concern for ministering to one another on campus and our concern for equipping ourselves for ministering to the world outside of the campus. Now, this sort of power, I believe, is a force which says that we don't especially want to be treated just as children or as students who have no say in what happens here, but we want to be co-workers, not in the sense that the faculty give up their positions and the administration their positions, but a part of the process of learning is that we too have to make some of the mistakes and take on some of the responsibility of the educational process. And I believe we want to do that now responsibly.
What was the attitude of the faculty, and I suppose we should say faculty and administration, because those are somewhat separate entities, as you saw them?
The faculty and administration, especially the ones that I got to work with before the moratorium and during the dialogues, was the sort of response was quite an open response. Now, they had certain things and certain questions that they were concerned with and had to ask, you know, how much would this be interrupting the regular functions of the campus, whether this would be worthwhile to interrupt, and all these I think are necessary. But at the same time, the type of openness that President Fierbringer showed earlier in the, when it wasn't quite so constructive, the type of openness and support that some of the faculty members gave us and the guidance that they tried to give us in terms of getting deeper than our superficial concerns, pushing deeper to see whether these were symptomatic of something more basic. It was, I believe it was quite a healthy, open support in as much as their positions would allow them to. Now, I'm not saying that they, you know, were there with open arms, But it wasn't the sort of reaction that I had expected earlier.
We're talking now with the president of Concordia Seminary, Dr. Alfred O. Fearbringer. Dr. Fearbringer, how would you evaluate the three-day moratorium on classes?
My first thought is that I'm deeply grateful for the way in which everything turned out. I really never was apprehensive because I recognized that the students were acting responsibly, and even though one or the other may have said something a little bit extreme or radical, yet the outcome was quite positive. I think that there were some underlying reasons for the discontent, which had been building up not only over a matter of months, but really for a year or two. The students sensed the fact that there's some repetition in the courses that they get here as compared to what they have had previously in their college years. And they also felt that there really was not enough choice given them, that there were too many required courses, and that if they had special interests or are thinking of preparing themselves for one or the other of the emerging special ministries, that they were not given adequate chance to get the courses that they wished. We have been offering a number of courses, let's say courses in urban sociology or the urban church, or courses that have to do with the present-day tensions in society and how the church has to deal with them. But these were only single sections, limited to perhaps 25 or at the most 30 students, when perhaps there would be 90 or 100 wanting to take that course in a given quarter. So what I think has happened is that the students have reminded us of the faculty that the rate of change and the rate of updating the curriculum to meet present-day needs for ministry has to be accelerated.
Representing the Board for Higher Education, with Dr. Samuel Golterman.
I want to be sure to indicate really what side we're on. And this is, for example, the report of the Board for Higher Education to the New York Convention, which I know has been heard because the president of this institution quoted it in the commencement address of the same year. Both as a system and as individual schools, our institution should work toward greater flexibility, more experimentation and innovation. Ministerial education, like all the rest of education, must again and again be rescued from a stultifying traditionalism in which educational inventiveness and ferment are destroyed by academic conventions and administrative red tape. The kind of people we want and need have high expectations of quality education. They want to have a substantial personal voice in determining the nature and character of their education. And they are most unhappy about many of the traditional forms, the red tape, and the regulations which oftentimes circumscribe even professional education as if the participants were children, delinquents, or idiots. I personally am much persuaded that all who are parties to what's been going on here the last couple of days are really profoundly in agreement. And I really hope for and pray for this type of mutual understanding which we need in order that the greatest possible good can come from this.
One of the men that chaired some of the sessions of the moratorium was Bill Beardsley.
The structure was set up out of the work carried on by a steering committee that was composed of faculty, administration, and students. This committee grew out of the faculty concern that this be a collegiality, a fraternal meeting of both faculty and students in an attempt to in an attempt to reach some kind of structure that would get the best use out of our time. This committee met from day to day during the moratorium to set up the structure. There were times, and I have to be quite candid, that we didn't know from one moment to the next what was coming. But we were settled on the one idea that we have buzz groups that we split into small sessions of about 20 students each with some faculty members in each group, so that between the first, second, fourth year students and the faculty, some real honest, open, close, candid discussion would be going on. Now that was the first day, basically buzz groups, and then we summed up the day's findings, and of course these were eventually published in the Post-Dispatch in one form or another, sometimes misquoted, taken out of context. From day to day, the structure committee would meet, and that structure committee would attempt to plan the next day. We built an open end into our structure so that we could move with it, and at times it was quite tense for us because we didn't know where the next day may go.
Ken, could you tell us, Ken Frazee, not Ken Freeze, as many of the newscasters reported you, could you tell us some of the concrete proposals that came out of the buzz groups that were and then collated into, shall we say, resolutions? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were scads of them. I try and collate some of the more important ones. One of the ones that is given top priority by a lot of students was that a student in the third quarter of this year, which means in a couple of weeks, be allowed to drop one course from his schedule. Immediately, this rings like academic irresponsibility, students trying to get out of some work. But we think that it's a very authentic kind of thing and something that's very important because we feel at the seminary level right now, and one of the main things that came out of the moratorium was that we're taking too many classes, just don't have enough time to do them justice, and so we have to reduce them in some way to be able to do any sort of credible job in any sort of field. So this is one important thing, and it was echoed in many different ways that we're throwing a lot of good, solid academic theological material that we relate to very positively, but we don't have the time to integrate them into our persons and to make them part of ourselves. A medical student, a law student doesn't have to do this, but we as theologians have to make what we learn in the classroom part of us, and we feel that we don't really have enough time to do this kind of thing.
If I could interject, the proposal to drop the 3 hours is really symbolic. We don't intend by dropping 3 hours just this year to really accomplish any great thing. We indicate by this dropping of 3 hours that in the future we think academic leisure, and that means a time for real absorption of the material rather than a skimming approach to theology, would be in evidence in the future.
Right. Secondly, one of the major ones is to do away with academic evaluation of our intern year. This is another key proposal. We don't want to get out of being evaluated. We think it's important that people be judged and be supervised. But we think that if a man's going to serve other human beings for this year, that a grade like A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, just doesn't really fit with the kind of evaluation we want. We want evaluation that really hits us where we live, tells us something about ourselves instead of some sort of grade. So I think that's another key proposal.
The newspapers, and I think one of the failings that they had was that they weren't around the entire time, and I guess we can't fault it for them, but they had put in newspaper stories resolutions passed that were never passed. For instance, the one that the Board for Higher Education should be replaced by some sort of board for theological education. Well, this resolution was defeated. What is the status of each one of the resolutions, and how will they be implemented?
I think we have to understand just who they are from. The part of the strength of the whole three-day dialogue was the fact that each and every student, I think, had a voice, a strong voice in it. First of all, in the discussion groups where he could talk to faculty and administration, and then in drawing up these resolutions. And so the theory strategy behind it was that each student, no matter how ridiculous or off base or sincere his ideas may be, each of them would have to be heard and taken seriously. Now, some of the resolutions came from groups, some came from committees, and others came from individuals. And the immediate ones were dealt with in the mass meeting, the plenary session at the last day of the moratorium. All of the rest, some concerning long-range plans, philosophy of education, which are more essential in terms in the long run, these are all now turned over to special task forces, four main task forces, seminary life, vicarage placement, faculty concerns, and curricular affairs. And these men are conducting open hearings, doing research on these, finding out what the implications of these are, and then they are reporting back in 3 weeks to a total student body meeting in order to announce their findings.
I don't know what title you have, Dave, but we're talking now to Dave Yagel, one of the student leaders who was involved in last week's moratorium. Dave, one of your particular interests in the moratorium was probably the educational or the theological backdrop to what was going on. These were not student demands about potato chips, as some chose to report, but they were much deeper concerns, and maybe you could explain what these concerns were.
I think, Raj, there are many concerns that theological students have about their education. One of the frameworks in which I can crystallize the problem for myself and for others is that we have felt some kind of divergence between the term theological education and the term ministerial training. Now, these two terms have been used synonymously to describe the educational process in forming a clergyman, but in one sense they connote different realities, the one being a more formal academic kind of training, the other being a more experience-oriented, practical fieldwork type of training. And I think we've been asking the question, just how much of each must be integrated into a core curriculum as we go about the educational process.
What do you mean, a core curriculum?
Well, this introduces the problem of what courses a student takes, in what sequence, what kinds of electives he will have. I think many students have felt that too much of their training program has been prescribed for them, that they have not had a voice in determining what will be the educational program they follow. And so we have raised the question, what constitutes a basic course of study for a Lutheran clergyman? What courses, how many hours, what types of educational methodology he should be exposed to, how much independent study he should be allowed, how much field experience should be integrated into his training, how much of this is required, how much is his own responsibility in perhaps some kind of counseling or mentor relationship.
I suppose the two opposite poles of education would be one, that the student completely chooses whatever courses he wants to take, the other, that he has absolutely no choice. At what point is the curriculum now on this continuum, and what perhaps would the majority of students like to see?
I think there is a consensus that along that continuum we fall on the more conservative, prescribed end. Most of our study has been prescribed. Certainly for our fourth year class, we went through the first and second year of training without choosing any courses on our own. We had some choices in area electives. You choose one or the other of a course within a given area, but that's really not what we mean by electivity. I think the concern of the students is to have, they will acknowledge that there is a required core that a Lutheran clergyman should have under his belt. What they're asking then is, beyond that, he should have some free choice. He should be free to determine his areas of strength and of weakness, and to deal with them in his formal training period at the seminary. So more choice. Would you say that there's any one best way to train a clergyman? No, this raises another another problem area. There has been what's referred to as a one-track system, everyone taking the same course of study. This has been referred to with some terms of derogation as a mold. I don't really see that it's been quite that. That's stifling. But I think we're asking, can we have several different models running simultaneously, running concurrently? And depending on the type of student we have here at the seminary, he can choose in consultation with many other people just exactly what track, what model of education best suits him, so that he'll become a well-trained individual while he's here.
We want solid theology, stuff that's as true to the biblical witness as possibly can be made. But we think that the way the structures are set up, we can't be as rigorous as we want to be. We can't be rigorous in the right kinds of ways.
There's been a great confusion through the past weeks between methodology in the classroom, which is part of the problem, how the class is conducted, and between actually the content of courses. And this has nothing to do with the students dictating so much what is taught, although that in some cases is a part of it. But there's much concern as to how a student is taught in the classroom and how he can best absorb the traditional material, which I think every student across the board feels is necessary. No students are writing off, you know, all traditional theology. It's just how much and in what manner it's taught.
Right. I think one way we could maybe illustrate what Bill is saying. Fellows who are what we call conservative and liberal on every phase of the spectrum are united in this kind of moratorium. Conversely, there are some faculty members who oppose the moratorium who are liberal and are conservative, and it cuts across all these kinds of lines, I think, and I think that shows that there isn't, I don't think, any substantive theological disagreement, although, you know, that's kind of a hazy thing, but it's mainly concerned, I think, with method.
On the one hand, I can see that the students of today are really much more serious-minded than the students of 20 or 30 years ago. I think that they take themselves quite seriously, of course a few too seriously. But in general, I feel that they are concerned about the work that they want to do. They have deliberately chosen the ministry, and they want to make sure that they prepare themselves in the best way for it. And I'm heartily in sympathy with these wishes on the part of the students. On the other hand, I also see a tendency that the students, in wanting to determine so many things for themselves, may be suffering from a lack of, not really a lack of trust, but a lack of confidence in God's guidance and judgment for them. It seems to me that together with the desire to prepare themselves as well as possible, they ought also to see that they will serve themselves and the church best if they put themselves and their abilities at the disposal of the church. And of course that means of God who's guiding the church, rather than that they seek to determine too much about their own special field of ministry.
Would you say that there were any threats or intimidations pushed at the faculty or thrown at the faculty?
I don't believe that there are any strong open threats thrown at the faculty. The fact that some of these resolutions, a few of them, had very strong student backing, it has inherent in it a sort of support which almost says to the faculty or administration that you have to at least deal with this seriously. It could be in some ways interpreted as a threat, but I don't believe it was intended that way.
At the conclusion of the convocation at which resolutions were adopted or declined, the academic dean, Walter Wegner, had these words.
Earlier today, I was asked, does this operation represent a selling off to the students? And the fact that the question was asked prompted me to say, well, I don't believe really he's saying, that what has happened here on this campus does not mean that the faculty and the Board of Control have abdicated the position of responsibility to which they have been called by the church and through the church by the Spirit of God. We simply couldn't do this without violating our consciences and our call. At the same time, precisely because I take seriously my call to help provide at this place the best possible theological education, I pledge myself to do all within my power to see to it that all proposals presented here get a fair hearing and a serious consideration by the appropriate committee or agency. But we should all clearly understand that there is nothing binding on those groups, nothing which will compel their agreement with or adoption of the proposals in their present form. And it should also be understood that these committees and agencies will be expected to act on these proposals on the basis of their intrinsic merit or lack of merit.
What do you think the effects of the moratorium will be, both immediate and long range?
Well, as far as the immediate effects are concerned, the faculty has already decided that professors and students can work together on several options of fulfilling course requirements. Courses that are mainly lecture and reading courses can be carried out so that the students spend more time in reading and then give account of what they have read and absorbed either by examination or by a conference with the professor. I think that this will be very satisfactory both to the faculty members and the students. Furthermore, some courses can be carried on completely on an honors basis. That is that the faculty member perhaps will have comparatively little contact with an able student who has selected a field of interest and works on his own in it under the directions given by the professor. So I think that this is one of the questions that perhaps generated the most pressure, and I think already in the spring quarter of this year, much of this pressure will be relieved. Furthermore, I think beginning with next fall, we shall probably have a shorter list of required courses and more electivity offered to the students, so that I think this will also provide much more satisfaction for a great number of students.
Asking you to do a little prognosticating here, what do you think will be the results of the moratorium? Do you think any ill will was caused by it? Do you think it'll be ignored? Just what?
Well, inevitably there are some hard feelings, but I think basically this was a very positive endeavor. I think the faculty and the administrative officers of the school were very supportive. I don't think anybody tried to quench, to squelch what was going on. And I think right now, there are more meetings going on campus than there ever have been before, and there is an earnest desire to make this thing fruitful.
I did not entertain high anticipations when I went into this thing. I felt that a catharsis would be a good experience, catharsis and emptying of the frustration would be a good experience in itself. Now I think that some proposals should be acted upon, and most of the students want them to be acted upon, or the ones Ken mentioned. In fact, we have a meeting in just a few moments to discuss some of those. But in the long run, I think with the theological educational research committee convening next year under leadership, that this material collated and worked into a good form becomes real grist for that revisionary committee's mill, so that they can build on a very outspoken and concrete sentiment. Whereas before this happened, perform a great service for the future.
I have a couple of mixed feelings on this. I basically go along with Bill. I think that's where I see it going in many ways. But we at the seminary, like any institution, have such a big turnover from year to year that next year's student body is going to be two-thirds different from this year's student body. So to be able to predict what's going to happen next year is pretty impossible. I don't really know what's going to happen. But what I would like to see this moratorium say is that we can be a self-critical kind of institution, that for the first time a lot of students and faculty openly said what we felt about each other, what we felt about the seminary, that we didn't feel that we had a cover-up, that we could really confront each other honestly and openly and in trust and faith. And if this thing can be built in the seminary a little bit more than it has been in the past, I think it's going to just really be beautiful. And I would like to see us be that kind of confessing, trusting kind of place. I see it as a reality now in the last 3 months of our school year, and I hope it carries over in September.
During the last half hour, you've heard a special documentary report on the Concordia Seminary class moratorium. Heard were student body president Neil Nauman, students David Yago, Bill Bursley, and Ken Frazee. We heard Dr. Alfredo Fearbringer, president of Concordia Seminary, academic dean Walter Wegner, Dr. Sam Golterman from the Board for Higher Education. This is Roger Colley.